Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the 2008 World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up a deal.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
And welcome to downtown St. Louis, where the poker action is always rolling. Lots of people playing this afternoon. And lots of people have been watching a lot of poker action in Las Vegas for the last couple of days. I'm Paul Harris. My partner, Team Poker Stars Pro Dennis Phillips, is in Las Vegas, where he's been watching the final table action at the Rio for the last couple of days. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
Hey, how's it going in there in St. Louis? Sorry if I sound a little bit scattered. I finally got to sleep about 5:30 this morning.
Yeah, I know. You and Joe McGowan, the poker coach, who's also on the line with us, both were watching a lot of action this weekend. Joe, how are you?
I'm doing well, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing great. I want to say here at the top of the show that if you are listening to the show today and you don't want to know what happened at the final table this weekend, this is not the show to listen to. We had a little internal debate here about whether we should talk about it, because it's not going to be on TV on ESPN until 8 o'clock Central Time tonight. And by the way, if you are going to be recording tonight's show, set your DVR to go a little bit late, because there was so much action, and I don't know how ESPN is going to pack it in to a two-hour show. And they've even said that they might run it a little bit late tonight and bump a little bit of Sports Center because of all the excitement that was there. But I want to give you a moment here, just a spoiler alert. We are going to be talking about everything that happened this weekend, because there was so much controversial stuff, so much play that we need to get into here, and so much that I think may affect the immediate future of poker that we absolutely can't ignore it here this afternoon. Would you agree, guys?
Yeah, but do we have to talk about everything I did in Vegas?
No, that stays in Vegas. And in addition to the final table action this weekend, we also have to talk about Dennis's upcoming appearance on High Stakes Poker, which he's taping later this week, and a quick little cameo appearance he even got to do on Poker After Dark a couple of nights ago. But all that will have to wait until we talk about this weekend at the Rio and the big finale last night, in which 21-year-old Joe Cada became the newest world champion in the world of poker. Dennis, you were there. Tell us a little bit about the big scene last night.
It was unbelievable. Again, this is kind of new for everybody and kind of new for ESPN and the WSOP. They were worried that when it got down to two people and Phil Ivey wasn't one of them, would anybody actually come to the Rio to watch the heads up on Monday night? Wow, were they wrong. All right, I made the great decision to not go through the front of the casino and through it all. I thought, well, I'll try and bypass it. I went around to the back side of it, came in the back door, started walking up toward the Penn & Teller Theater, and the entire line they had for people trying to get in was lined up right along the alleyway I was walking. Talk about a mistake. There were hundreds of people lined up there wanting to get in that didn't have tickets.
I heard that once everybody was in and filling up every seat inside, there was still a line 2 football fields long snaking through the lobby of the Rio last night.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
More than that. Even more. Because it was even,
flabbergasted.
3-4 wide.
Nobody expected this kind of turnout. Nobody expected this kind of enthusiasm. This room was just electrified. There wasn't a person in there that didn't get hoarse, I don't think, before the night was out.
Now, we're going to talk about the actual poker play here in just a moment. And later on this hour, Annie Duke is going to join us for her view of the final table, because she was there and doing some of the online broadcast for Bluff magazine. But I'm curious about the Dennis Phillips effect. You changed the world of poker last year with all the Philippians who were dressed up in your shirt and hat and going crazy, and the truck horn and everything like that. Did any of these players have enough fans to even come close to recreating the Dennis Phillips effect?
Well, they didn't, but it wasn't necessarily their fault. It's limited seating. There's only like 1,000 seats in there. Last year, nobody else had really put everything together, and we were able to grab, 300 or so of the seats. This year, they were limited to a maximum of 100 seats, and most of them only had, were only given about 50 seats of the 9 players. So, they just couldn't do it for that reason. But by gosh, they tried.
Yeah,
we had hats, we had shirts, we had chants. We had whatever you can imagine in there.
What were you saying, Joe?
They definitely had a lot of the same things that, you know, Dennis's group did last year. And, you know, it was pretty cool to see it. I mean, that's pretty pretty sincere, you know, compliment in a way for Dennis that a lot of the people just, quite frankly, copied a ton of the stuff that Dennis did that last year. But Dennis is right. It was much smaller because it's just gotten so popular. And like you said, Paul, the line was a lot longer than that once the place was full. I mean, it was packed because I got there a little bit late myself. I mean, there were, like, double lines just everywhere for people trying to get in there. It was awesome. I mean, it was excitement and stuff we're going to talk about and hands and coolers and bad beats and just unbelievable excitement. And then at some point, if not today, I'd love to even talk about, like, this year's final table in comparison to the poker of last year's final table. Maybe talk about that at some point, because I think that was quite a bit different. I mean, there's so many things that we can talk about that are going to be great for the radio show and our listeners. It's going to be fun.
And even though I watched it online and listened to some of the audio feed of it online and know a lot of what happened, I still am going to be watching the ESPN coverage tonight, because there are some of these hands where, of course, we couldn't see the whole cards, and I want to know, what did that guy have in that situation? In fact, there was one situation where Darvin Moon made a huge move, and I don't remember exactly what the hand was on Saturday. One of you can refresh my memory on this, but I think it was a hand where Darvin raised to something like $1.3 million under the gun, and Steven Begleiter made it about $4 million from late position, and Darvin made the call, and a flop came out, and he checked, and Begleiter bet $5 million, and Darvin made it $15 million, and Begleiter moved in for $20 or $21 million, and Darvin mucked his hand. It would have cost him like $5 million more to call into a stack of $40 million or so, maybe $45 million, and he mucked his hand. I can't wait to see what happened in that hand. Do either of you know?
Dennis, you want to go first, or can
Paul,
I?
Oh, you wouldn't believe it, but according to the people I kind of talked around the room, Marvin could have had anything, or Darvin could have, and the other ones. I had every guess in the world. He had aces. No, he had nothing. Yes, he had kings. No, he had nothing. It was unbelievable. Nobody could figure out exactly what those two hands were. So, yes, we need to see what it is. It's going to be curious.
And the flop, by the way, was 4-3-2 with two spades. Joe, do you have any idea or know what they were playing in that hand?
Yeah, I was right there close to that hand, and, I mean, I couldn't believe it. You know, when the way the action went and how aggressive it was and so much money in the middle, and for Darvin to be able to fold, because I think the flop was basically all babies, might have been 9 high or 4
no,
high.
No, it was 4-3-2.
4-3-2. Someone else said that to me last night. It was 4-3-2. I thought it might have been 9 high, so 4-3-2. But the way the betting went, poker coach segment,
yeah.
If you guys can, listeners can watch that hand tonight and look at how Begleiter put the chips in, look at what his hands look like, look at what his breathing looks like, look at what his eyes look like. I've seen him flop straights. I've seen him flop sets. I've seen him flop multiple huge, huge hands where he's had the nuts. I've never, ever seen him look like this. Now, I felt everybody in the room right at that moment was swearing that he had aces or kings, Begleiter. He had to have aces or kings the way the betting went, and that Darvin would have to call with whatever he had because it's only $6 million more, worth about $35, $40 million in the pot. But just, I'm dying to see that hand because somehow, some way, I mean, yes, I guess he probably had to have aces or kings, but I turned everybody around me. I'm like, you know, I think he's got like ace-king, ace-queen, and missed. And he's going for it and could be blowing up because Darvin's going to have to call with even like pocket sevens or eights because the pot's so big. But Darvin must have not even had that because he had to fold. So that's one of so many hands that were so incredible that it's just like, what was that? Like, what happened? Like, you know, and there was great play too here and there. And maybe that was great play, but it was just so interesting. I'm dying to see what those guys had in that hand.
Me too. Joe Cada staged a remarkable comeback at the final table after he and Darvin Moon started their heads-up session. It was after midnight St. Louis time before they started, and almost 3 o'clock in the morning when they finished up. At one point, Cada on Saturday night was down to 1% of all the chips in play, $2.7 million, and then comes back to win the entire event. You know, people always talk about a chip and a chair. here's a kid who was on the cusp of going out a nobody and now is going to be known as the 2009 world champion. Dennis, how remarkable is that?
Well, it's unbelievable, and actually it even goes a little bit of a step further than that. He had 2.7 after losing a hand, and he was a big blind on the next one, which was $500,000. So he has 2.2 sitting in front of him, you know, a handful of chips, just lost a massive pot, and now he's the big blind where he has to almost go in with any two cards. Literally, the poker playing has now disappeared because he's got 20% of his chips in the pot pre-flop with the ante and the big blind. And, you know, it's like, okay, give me something. Give me two live cards because my chips are going in.
Right, and I'll tell you what, guys, without trying to maybe some stuff we might have to give away to our listeners and some stuff we can talk about and still leave it, but we know that he lost the hand, and I'll tell you this, I think this was one of the worst calls in final table history that Joe made, and of course he goes on to win, and great for him, and he has a lot of great play that he made during, you know, the entire run of the World Series, but this call, I got to say, what in the world is he thinking of making this call against the player that moved it all in from up front? And again, who knows, and you don't know what people see, and you're not in the chair, and sometimes people have a read, and you know, you don't know, because I'm not out there playing with these guys for all this time, and he may have saw something. But as the cards lie and the way the situation looked, and chip stack, to make that call was unbelievable to me, and he loses. And then the very next hand was almost more unbelievable to me, although I think Joe's call was just one of the top ones I couldn't believe out of maybe 10 that we'll probably get to at some point. But the next hand, like you say, Dennis, he's going in with anything. And again, at the poker coach type segment, if you look at what Joe looked like after he lost that pot, look at his face. It's so red. He's sinking in his chair. I mean, he just wants to get out of there, in my opinion. There's no way he's not going all in on the next hand with any two cards, as he should. You know, but, I mean, he's going all in for sure. And for the person that pushed all in to force him to call, he's going to call without even looking at his cards, the hand that person had, which allows him to double up, I just couldn't believe it. And I think that's what made Joe Kata be able to win, because if the person would have folded their hand and not doubled him up from 2.7 to whatever he went to with blinds and antes, maybe 6 or so, you know, we wouldn't be talking about Joe Kata hardly at all. We'd just be talking about what a bad call he made with his hand and how he got knocked out 7th, and that would be pretty much it. But it's incredible.
We are talking about the final table of the 2009 World Series of Poker main event, which played out this weekend and will air on ESPN tonight. And, yes, we are talking about Joe Kata as the new world champion, but we're delving into some of these hands and some of the controversies about it as well. And Annie Duke will join in the conversation in about 15 minutes. I'm Paul Harris with Team Poker Stars Pro Dennis Phillips and the poker coach Joe McGowan. This portion of the show is brought to you by Poker Stars, where you can play against pros like Dennis. And by the way, Joe Kata, sponsored by Poker Stars this year, yet another Poker Stars winner at the main event final table, Dennis.
Absolutely. It's unreal. Every year, the one that wins this seems to be in the stable of Poker Stars. If you want to play with Joe Hashem, Chris Moneymaker, Greg Raymer, you want to play with Peter Eastgate, and now with Joe Kata, you go to PokerStars.net. Sit down, learn the game. This is free to download and play. It's the award-winning 24/7 support. It's fully licensed and regulated. It is the best software and game selection in the world. Any time, day or night, any kind of game, that's the place you need to go. Let me tell you something. I'm there. I love it. I will play Poker Stars all the time. And if you want to go there and learn any kind of game, just go there, go down to the bottom of the page, and you'll see scrolled right across the bottom, Texas Hold'em, Omaha, Omaha High-Low, Stud, whatever it happens to be. Click on that and learn the basics of the game. Go on the site, get a little bit more professional on it, and then why don't you come out to Vegas and let's have some fun.
There you go.
Hey, Dennis. Dennis,
yeah.
You know, for our listeners, too, for next year when they go to the main event and if they happen to make it deep, of course they have to sign with Poker Stars because now their odds are that much greater of winning. So it's another advantage when Full Tilt comes calling and Poker Stars calls, make sure you go with Poker Stars.
Certainly has paid off for them. All right, the guys are in Vegas. I'm in St. Louis. This is the Lumiere Plays Final Table. Back after this on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Hi, Bob Eubanks here. I can't wait to come to town with my $250,000 game show spectacular.
This November, the game shows you once loved are your chance to win big cash at Lumiere Place Casino and Hotels. Play through November to win a seat in the game show audience November 28th. And if Bob Eubanks calls your name, you could be one of 50 to take home cash and prizes. And six lucky contestants will play for their chance at $250,000. Get to Lumiere Place and earn your spot in the audience today. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
Tuesday is Poker Day on 590 The Fan KFNS. So here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris live from downtown St. Louis at the Lumiere Place Final Table.
I am Paul Harris here at Lumiere while Dennis is out in Las Vegas along with Joe the Poker Coach McGowan. They have both been experiencing and been in the middle of the World Series of Poker main event Final Table all weekend long. And a reminder, if you're just joining us, we are talking about who won this thing, even though it won't be on TV on ESPN for another 6 or 7 hours. So if you don't want to have that spoiled for you, skip today's show or listen to it later on the podcast. You can always catch up on the podcast through any of our shows by going to Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. Annie Duke is scheduled to join us in just about 10 minutes or so. By the way, Joe Cato, who was the winner, had a lot of fans in the audience, including, I read online, 4 shirtless fans spelling out his name, C-A-D-A. And I understand that the C was a young woman who was topless. I guess that's better than Darvin's fans mooning the crowd.
Well, there were some comments on that, I'll have to admit.
I bet there were.
I think there were a couple sitting next to Barry Greenstein, and he was tweeting at the time. And he had a few comments about a full moon showing up or something like that. So,
there are a couple of hands that we've got to talk about, including one. It wasn't the last hand, but it was pretty close to the end, in which Joe Cato had the button. And this is heads up against Darvin Moon for the bracelet and the title. But this is a few hands before that all got decided. Cato raised it to $3 million, and Moon made the call. And the flop came out 10 of clubs, 5 of diamonds, 9 of hearts. Now, I guess I should point out at this point the blinds were 600,000 and 1.2 million, so a raise to 3 million wasn't all that out of the ordinary. The flop comes 10 high, and the action goes check, check. And the turn comes to 10 of diamonds. Moon checks again. Cato bets out 3 million, and Moon quickly announces an all-in, which, because he has the biggest chip stack and has Cato dominated, really means he's putting Cato all in if Cato wants to call for another $47 million. At that point, Cato sank back into his chair, I understand, and didn't quite know what to do, went into the tank, as we say it in the poker business, and was agonizing over it before finally quietly saying, I call, realizing, I'm sure, that his entire tournament was at risk here, and everybody's wondering, what do these guys have? They turn over their cards, and Darvin Moon has a 7-8 of spades. In other words, he's at this point turned a straight draw. He actually flopped a straight draw because there's a 9 and a 10 on board, but another 10 came on the turn, and all he's got is a straight draw. He's got an 8 high and a straight draw. Joe Cato turns over the jack of hearts and the 9 of diamonds. With the 9 on board, he now has 2 pair, 10s and 9s, and everybody goes crazy, and Cato's ahead. But Moon has the open-ender. If he catches one of the 3 jacks left in the deck or one of the 4 sixes, then he's going to win the entire thing and become the champion right there. But the river is a blank. It's a 3 of hearts. And Cato doubles up and then rolls on to just a few hands later, winning this whole thing. I'm curious about your reaction, guys, to that hand and whether it was pretty much everything we saw in this tournament wrapped up into that one single hand right there. Dennis?
Oh, it was a slightly unbelievable, I have to admit. To give you a little bit of background, you guys can watch it. Obviously, when they started out, Joe had over 60% of the, hell, he had over 70% of the chips to start with. Darvin was behind substantially. Hand after hand after hand, Darvin would raise or re-raise and take the pot down. And he was building his seat, took up several good-sized pots, a lot of small pots. He was just building it up. He had him totally dominated. It had done a flip-flop, even a little more than a flip-flop, in right. Darvin's favor. So Joe was back there where he was going to have to somehow or other stop the bleeding or pick a hand and just shove and see what happens. Didn't have too much choice on it. Darvin appeared to have a great read on him, could tell whenever he was pushing out there weak. and just kept challenging him, which is a great way to play heads-up poker. So, you know, not for sure what happened there. I'm not for sure why he felt the need to shove it. I talked to him afterwards, and he said, my mistake was not doing it on the flop. On the flop, he lays down the nine.
Right.
And
true.
That may have been true. He said, on the turn, he couldn't do it. So, in his opinion, he should have done that move, and the move was the right move, but he should have done it on the flop, and he could have taken the hand down. So,
well,
Joe made
too,
a small mistake there.
Yeah, likely but, Garvin would have bet a 10 on the flop. Now, you said it went check-check, Paul. Is that right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, likely, you know, anyone that has a 10, heads up, you're going to bet to protect your hand because if an overcard comes, you have no clue where you are if the other guy now bets or takes the lead. So likely a normal person would bet a 10 there. And, you know, it's easier perhaps. It's an amazing call. It's his tournament life, but it's a little easier now to make the call with the Jack 9 because it's less likely to put him on a 10 because another one has arrived and he didn't bet the flop. Now, still, it's an amazing call when you're playing for that much money and history and the whole deal. That was close to probably a hero call by Joe.
Well,
but
go ahead. Joe's exactly right, and that's one other little point on it, too, is the overbet at this level. I'm not sure what was in the pot, but I doubt if there was $10 million in the pot, and all of a sudden he shoves, and it's going to take Joe an extra $45 million to make the call.
You know, also, for our listeners, you know, I would tell them, pay attention, too, to how quickly Darvin was checking and how quickly he was making his bets. And that's stuff that I look for all the time to get reads on players of the strength or weakness of their hand. It was also interesting, everybody in the building, from the security guards to I don't know how many people were stuffed in there because it was a whole lot more than what the maximum capacity was. you know, I mean, they were just people just stuffed in every corner, everywhere, going crazy. And everyone was taking little side prop bets for no money or real money and how long the heads-up was going to match last. You know, and last year with Eastgate and Deminoff, you know, I think it went a long time. And I think when you get two players, you know, heads up, and if it's two top players, they usually like to kind of grind down and be careful. These guys were playing huge pot after huge pot, not to take anything away from their play, but everybody in the building, the over-under was probably an average about an hour is what people thought this match would take, and it would just be over. Because these guys played so aggressively, which is probably good for heads-up play. But it was just surprising to me, like every hand, you know, during that hand, the people around me are like, oh, he's got ace 10. You know, he's got to have 3-10. He's got to have this. You know, he's got to have kings, you know. And they roll it over, and a lot of people are shocked. It's like, well, if everybody in the building thought it was going to be an hour, and they're playing every hand for these huge pots, why is it so surprising, you know, that it's kind of a semi-bluff with a nine, really? You know, it shouldn't have been a complete shock because these guys are raised. Every hand was raised, like, big, pre-flop. There's no limping, you know, keeping the pot small. You know, they definitely didn't read, you know, that book by Daniel Negreanu, you know, Small Ball. it was incredible. That was a key hand that was just awesome. And, you know, I think for people listening to the show, Paul, for our show, it might be an advantage to listen to the show to kind of be able to look for key things that they might miss by not listening to our show today. I mean, there's going to be some stuff we're going to talk about that would be interesting to look for and watch for. Like I said, with Darvin checking and how fast he checked and how fast he put the chips in. Also, how Joe Cato looks at his cards. You know, as simple as that. See if that shows up. There's something interesting there as well.
I agree with you.
Along the same line, what Joe was saying before he'd ever started, I got interviewed, and they were taking a little survey. They were talking to Barry Greenstein, the rest of us around there. How many hands do you think this will last before a champion is crowned? And I knew I was totally out of it. I guessed 34 hands, found out that it was the same guess that Phil Hellmuth made, so I knew I was done. but he ranged everywhere from 24 for a low to 48 hands was the high number anybody picked. As long as this would last.
It went 88 hands, by the way, if anybody cares. Lasted about 2.5 hours. More hands of poker played this year at the final table than have been played in almost any other final table in history. The other hand that we're going to need to talk about here, and I'm going to break in a moment because we have Annie Duke, who is scheduled to join us in just a couple of minutes. But just one other thing about that hand that I want to say. I can't see any of this except, you know, texts online and the audio description by Phil Hellmuth and Joe Seebach and some of the others who were doing it for Bluff Magazine on their audio feed. But I was 100% sure that neither of these guys had a 10. And when Kada took so long, I thought to myself, he's got a 9, but it's not a strong 9. He doesn't have ace 9 here. He doesn't even have king 9. And making that call with jack 9, don't you think he had to be worried a little bit that Darvin had a bigger 9 than him?
You should have seen him. He was melting in his chair when he made the call. You couldn't hardly hear it. It was, hello.
Yeah, you're right. You know, by the way, guys, talking about the number of hands and how long everybody thought it would take, keep in mind, when you watch the first hand tonight, okay, and I won't say what it was, and if it comes up, it comes up, but, you know, I won't bring it up. This thing could have been over in one hand.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
All the big blinds that they have, all the room they have to play with the extra chips this year, this thing could have been over if the flop came 3-3-4. I'm telling you, I think this thing would have been over in one hand. The first hand that you're going to see on TV tonight.
Absolutely agree.
I absolutely agree 100% as well. This is the Lumiere Place Final Table. Paul Harris in St. Louis at Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel in the poker room. Dennis Phillips, the Team PokerStars Pro, and Joe McGowan, the poker coach, both in Las Vegas, where they were firsthand witnesses to the final table of this year's World Series of Poker main event. Annie Duke was there as well, and she'll join us in the next segment here at the Lumiere Place Final Table. This portion of the show is brought to you by Reactor Watch. You got yours on, Dennis?
I am wearing it, without a doubt. It never comes off my wrist, except when I'm at the poker table. Because every time I sit down at it, people look at it and go, wow, what is that? And then I have to hand it, and it gets passed all the way around. I've had times where the dealers have stopped shuffling, waiting for the watch to make the rounds on it, because they want to take a look at it. This thing is awesome, and it is the most durable watch you will ever buy, period. You can match it up against any Swiss watch, anything you want. This is the same one I've talked about before, that they drop off of bridges, they run over with cars, they hit it with sledgehammers. I'm telling you, it's unbelievable. If you want a watch that's going to be something you can be proud of, something that everybody will admire and will last your lifetime, go to reactorwatch.com and pick one out, that Reactor Trident or any of the others. They're awesome, awesome watches.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table, the only show in St. Louis with a poker millionaire. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host Paul Harris on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
I am in downtown St. Louis while Dennis is out in Las Vegas, where he was firsthand witness to the World Series of Poker main event final table this weekend, as was our next guest, who's one of the best-known poker players in the world. She has cashed 37 times herself in the World Series of Poker, made 15 final tables, got a bracelet in 2004 for an Omaha 8 event. She published her autobiography in 2005. She won the second annual World Series of Rock, Paper, Scissors a couple of years ago. She has co-founded Ante Up for Africa with Don Cheadle and raised tens of thousands of dollars for that great cause. And earlier this year, of course, she appeared on The Celebrity Apprentice opposite her nemesis, Joan Rivers. Who can forget hearing Joan going after her like this?
And your people, you give money with blood on it. I met your people in Vegas for 40 years. None of them have last names. None of them. They have cash fulls of... You're a poker player. A poker player. That's
awesome.
Beyond white trash.
Poker players are
poker
the most
players.
Awesome people
poker
in the world.
Poker players are trash, darling. Trash.
Boy, talk about the pot not understanding what color the kettle was there. That was Annie Duke earlier this year on The Celebrity Apprentice. And we're happy to welcome you to the Lumiere Place Final Table. Hi, Annie.
Hi, how you doing?
We're doing just great. Thanks for joining us today, and congratulations on the terrific work you and your fellow Ultimate Bet people were doing with the audio coverage of the final table this weekend. I was listening to it online so that I could stay in touch since I wasn't in Vegas, and I really enjoyed it.
I'm glad. You know, it's hard on you're on the radio, so it was kind of twofold. We're on the radio trying to describe the final table action, and we can't see the whole card.
Yeah.
So, we did our best with what we had, and hopefully we gave good analysis of the game. I mean, I'm going to be really interested to see it with whole card tonight, so I can see if some of my impressions of how that table was going are actually true, or if there was something going on I didn't see.
Well, that's what
So
that's what we've been discussing here today. I was following along and couldn't help but wonder if you, as a poker pro, watched the way things played out Saturday night, even before the heads-up match between Moon and Kata last night, and whether you thought that it was good for poker that we ended up with these two guys after the way the final table was being played out. Was all of this good for the game of poker?
You know, I mean, I feel like it's kind of twofold. It was interesting. I don't know if you follow Mike Matisseau on Twitter, but I do. And he actually rarely tweets, but he was tweeting a lot last night and was very disparaging about the play of the two people who were heads up. And, you know, I mean, I think it's kind of a double-edged sword. You know, on the one hand, is it good for poker if people who clearly just got lucky, you know, are there in the heads-up match? You know, well, yes, because then people feel like, you know, look, if a logger from, you know, the East Coast who's never been on a plane, who wasn't even planning to play the event, you know, if they can get in there and come in second and make $5 million despite the fact that they made some really tremendous blunders, you know, along the way, well, then I probably can do that too. You know, look, the guy who won got his money in with an underpair twice, you know, like he was going to be out of the tournament twice with, you know, an 18% shot. Well, I can probably win too then, you see. So that side of it, I think, is good for poker. I mean, that's kind of on the sort of moneymaker side where people can relate and sort of feel like, look, you don't have to be like some super duper genius. You can get lucky and still win the main event of the World Series of Poker. So that's kind of the one side of the argument. The other side of the argument for me, though, is that I have concerns because, you know, I work pretty closely with the PPA, and we spend a lot of time trying to show people and explain to people why poker is a game of skill. And, of course, you can't take one final table and make a judgment, you know, scientifically or mathematically, really, about whether poker is a game of skill just by looking at what happened at that one final table. But that doesn't mean that, you know, public perception isn't somewhat swung by that. And so, you know, I have concerns that people are going to look at that final table and say, you know, see, there really isn't any skill in poker. It's just luck. And, you know, that is bad, I think, in the long run for poker. It might be good in the short run in terms of making people feel like they can win. Do you know what I mean?
I absolutely agree with you, and I, as a cash game player, I want people who look at this as a game that's all about luck to sit down at that table and play, and we'll have a lot of fun over the next couple of years if more and more of them do that. Dennis, you
right,
also
you know,
do a lot of work.
But at the same time, we've got this back point, you know, legalized poker, and I think that yes. The luck versus skill thing is important there, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and Dennis, you also do a lot of work with the PPA. What do you say?
Well, absolutely, and Annie brings up some very valid points there on it. I want to take a little bit of a different angle, though. You have two people that ended up at the final table, and you know, how they got there, I won't dispute anything Annie says, but they're two very likable people. They're people that people can associate with, one middle-aged, one young. Both of them come across great. Nobody knew Darvin when he came out there, and half of the crowd was there to support him. They'd never met him. They didn't know him. They just liked him because that's kind of a person he is. Joe had his own group that he brought out there, but he's young, he's a little brash, and he has a lot of fun, but he's got this great smile, and he's really he's an okay guy. Both of these can
help
and be
good ambassadors
for
the sport.
You know, I mean,
I agree. That's sort of the moneymaker thing that I was
to do it. So how they got there, not going to dispute it, but they're there, and I think they can be very positive for the sport if they will just take the ball and run with it.
So as I said, like what I was saying, Dennis, was I think that sort of from the standpoint of the moneymaker effect, it's really good. You know, you have this average guy, like, I mean,
exactly.
How Darvin Moon's story is really amazing. Like, he'd, like, never been on a plane. He wasn't even intending to play. He was overwhelmed by the Rio. Like, and here's a guy who came in second. And I think that, you know, in that sense, it's great in terms of increasing the popularity of the game and making people feel like they can relate to the people who actually make these final tables so they feel like they have a chance. And I think that's all great. My concern is really in terms of the long-term effects on what kind of effect is that going to have on the arguments to make poker legal? Because a lot of those arguments really hinge on the concept that poker is a game of skill, and we know in the past that legislators have liked to refer to, you know, and lawyers have liked to refer to like single hand. Well, you know, how can you say poker is a game of skill? Because I remember I had Jack 10, and you know somebody else had aces, and I beat them. And I feel like there's just a lot of fodder at that final table for those kinds of, you know, obviously silly and specious arguments, but unfortunately, like, they kind of carry a lot of weight with a lot of people, you know?
Well, I can agree with that. However, I am going to say one thing that most people didn't realize. They didn't think Darvin would come to the table and play the kind of game he did, being that overly aggressive. And they don't give him credit for some things. I talked to him afterwards. I talked to him beforehand. He doesn't have the experience. He can misplay hands. He does a lot of things that way, absolutely. But he does have some of the little parts of the game that a lot of people don't even think about that do involve skill. He loves trying to read the other player. He loves watching their breathing, watching their how they hold their hands, what kind of size bets they make, the rest of it there. And nobody gives him any credit for that. And I'm telling you, there were times when he had such a read on Joe because of his skill in reading people that he knew it didn't make any difference what hands he had. He knew all he had to do was make the bet, and Joe was going to fold. And that is skill.
No, you know what? Darvin definitely had some play in him. He showed that leading up to the final table. You know, my concern was that there was obviously, you know, in two particular instances, there was actually three instances that I can think about, there was a pretty big fall down sort of on some basic mathematical concepts and concepts about what pot commitment means and, you know, pricing and those kinds of things. So, you know, he definitely has a grasp of things like putting pressure on people, that it's better to be a better than a caller, that... you know, you can read people and see when they're weak and try to come after them when they're weak. Like, look, I don't think anybody who makes the final table of the World Series of Poker is without skill. I don't think there's any question about that. It was just really interesting to see, I think, and we hadn't seen it necessarily in the coverage leading up to it, that there were really some huge gaps in his sort of conceptual understanding of the game. Do you know what I mean?
Yep. I think you nailed it right there. Again, it may be lack of experience, it may be whatever, but there were some definite huge gaps. He brought a lot of game, a lot of natural skills maybe even on it.
He definitely did.
He definitely has room for improvement.
You know, and I've always said with people, like, if I have to teach a student, I want to teach a student whose tendency is to be way overly aggressive. Like, I want the way overly aggressive guy to teach rather than the guy who's not aggressive enough. Because it's much easier to pull somebody back than it is to, like, create an aggressive instinct in somebody. And it goes to show you, like, when you do see people getting lucky in that way, when we think about, like, the people who've done really well in that event, who we can think of as people who, you know, perhaps got luckier. You know, somebody like a Jamie Gold who, you know, I mean, none of these people are without skill. I'm not saying that they're without skill, but they're definitely on, you know, the luckier end of the spectrum when we think about people who've done well in the main event. But when you look at, like, a Jamie Gold or a Darvin Moon or any of these people, one of the big lessons that we can take from it is that their big mistakes are that they're overly aggressive.
Yep.
And that should tell you something, because that's how you get chips in your stack. You know what I mean?
And Darvin was absolutely overly aggressive far too often, including, I think, on the last hand, where he played, frankly, like a low-limit cash player. You know, there's a tiny little pot there, and he's willing to put it all in there on earlier hands. And then on the last one, to make the call, and this is the one hand I don't think we should give away on the show since it's going to air tonight, but Annie, I think you'll agree with me, that was a horrible call he made on the last hand.
Well, I mean, I agree, and I think actually that he made a similar mistake earlier on in the tournament where Steve Begleiter opened the pot for $1.6 million. The blinds were 300, 600. He opened the pot for $1.6 million, which is a very standard raise at the table. It was small, and Begleiter has $24 million total to start this hand. So for all intents and purposes, Darvin Moon's stack is $24 million because that's all that Begleiter has. Anyway, so Begleiter opens for 1.6 in first position. Now, granted, at a five-handed table, so he can have a slightly wider range, but it's still in first position, so he's supposed to have a hand. And Darvin Moon moved in for $24 million off that 1.6 with ace-queens, which is a huge, massive overbet. It's an interesting concept because it's a situation where he only gets called by hands that beat him. And when you look at the hands that don't beat him, you're going to find out the same information from making it four and a half or 5 million. So if he had made it 4.5 or 5 million, particularly when he's re-raising someone who's raised out of the one hole, the majority of hands are going to fold. He might actually get like an ace jack to call him, which he would be happy about. But he's going to find out right away that he happens to be against queens because Begleiter is going to move in, and now he can fold for that extra 16-17 million. So again, it was a situation where he put in about, I think it was about 17 million extra in tips that weren't really accomplishing any goal for him, except to get called by a hand that had him buried, which is exactly what happened. He happened to hit an ace on the river. So I think that this was a general issue with him. His opening raises were sized fine. It was those re-raises that he was sizing poorly. And I think that it just had to do with not sort of understanding, you know, what are these chips doing for me? Like, if I put in $4.5 million, what's that going to do for me that's different than if I put in $24 million here when the guy's only open for 1.6? And you saw some similar problems there, you know, in the heads-up match. I think that Mike Matisseau actually tweeted something like, well, Darvin, I re-raise you $50 million, Moon didn't win, or something like that. Like, he was making a reference to the size of the bets, I think.
Yeah. This is the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, and the podcast available on Dennis Phillips' website, which is thechipleader.com. We're talking with Annie Duke, who was there for the final table of the main event this year, covering it and watching everything and keeping an eye on things. I'm curious for both Dennis and Annie here, if you think that the strategy that the World Series of Poker has about playing this thing so long on Saturday, 17 and a half hours from start to finish, and then coming back the next night at 10 o'clock Vegas time, and it goes until 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. Do you think that's a bad idea? I know they're doing it because they want to save it for TV, and they don't want a lot of people to be able to find out about it until it airs tonight. But do you think that with an age difference between the oldest guy at the table, Darvin Moon, and the youngest guy at the table, Joe Cada, that they're running into a problem where you're giving a little bit of an edge to younger players who have a little bit more stamina and are willing to play longer sessions than anybody else?
I think for sure. I mean, I'm confused because I know that, like, at least going into the next year, there's going to be essentially a hard and fast rule that you have to have a 12-hour turnaround and that, you know, day ones aren't really going to be much more than 12 hours. So if they're having, you know, kind of a hard in and out of 12 hours on just like a random $1,500 tournament, I can't imagine having these people play for their, you know, for the biggest thing that they've anybody could ever play for in poker and forcing them to play 17 hours. I think it's really crazy because I don't think, you know, there is an endurance, you know, some of what poker is about is endurance, but certainly not most of what poker is about is endurance. And I think, you know, 12, you know, that 12 to 13 hour range is an endurance test enough as it is, you know, and I think that it would be helped. I think that the players would be more lively. I think that the play would be better if we allowed them that, you know, we just said, if it's not down to heads up by 12 hours, we're coming back tomorrow.
Well, I agree with Annie on this totally. Let's play poker. Let's concentrate on the poker aspect of it, not a physical stamina deal on it. We'll give you a little bit of a difference. Ours was over last year on hand 169. At 169 this year, they still had seven people in it. So definitely there was a ton more hands that were played. But that could happen again next year. So we don't want another 17-hour session. We want to make some sort of a change in the structure of it. I agree with you totally on that.
The structures of the tournament themselves were actually changed this year, and I think that the structures were better. And I think also, you know, there was this is kind of effective. The people who happened to make it deep tended to be people who were playing faster, who were, you know, maybe overbetting, and that can actually cause you to get to the final table with much deeper stacks. So, I mean, if we think about the fact that Darvin Moon had sucked up 30% of the chips at this final table and that we had all of these short stacks, I mean, you know, someone who was sitting with $10 million was starting the day at 150,300,000, and you know what? That's a lot of chips. That's over 30 bets. Like, oftentimes you have a chip average at a final table that's between 30 and 40 bets. And here we had our shortest stack, you know, sitting in between 30 and 40 big bets, which creates very deep stack poker. You know, so you're very likely to get, you know, much longer play at the final table because of that. I think it's, you know, I just think it's silly to have them play until 6 in the morning. I think it's crazy. It's like old school from, you know, 1995.
Yep, I agree 100%. Annie, before we let you go here, I want to get a big plug in for an event that you're doing next Thursday, the Annie Duke Celebrity Poker Night at one of our favorite West Coast casinos, The Commerce in Los Angeles. And tell our listeners about that for those who are downloading our podcast and can make it there to L.A. for November 19th.
Well, you know, obviously everybody knows about the work that I do with Antia for Africa because, you know, obviously it's all over ESPN, you know, with the World Series. But I actually have another charitable passion, not just, you know, what's going on in Africa, and it's sort of the state of education in this country. So I'm on the board of a foundation called Decision Education Foundation. People can go find out about it at decisioneducation.org. And what we do there is create curricula for K-12, you know, to teach critical thinking skills to kids, to teach good decision-making skills to kids. Now, secretly, I think one of the reasons why I have this passion is because I've made my living off of people who are really bad decision-makers, because all that poker is this exercise of decision-making, right?
Yeah.
So I think that I need to, like, give some payback and you know, work on creating better decision-makers out of our youth. And, you know, we partner not just with regular private schools, but also with disadvantaged youth. We're partnering with a program called After School All-Stars, which is an after-school enrichment program, structured time for inner-city kids who, you know, if they're not in that program, your best-case scenario is that they're watching TV. You know, most of them are Title I, and obviously those kids really need some help with critical thinking skills and decision skills in order to help them, for example, do simple things like stay in school and not drop out. So, you know, really excited about the work that the foundation does, really committed to it. And so on the 19th, which is on Thursday, doing a really cool event, you know, at the Commerce, Matt Savage is going to be running it, $300 buy-in with $100 rebuys for the benefit of Decision Education Foundation. Some really cool prizes. I mean, for one thing, if you win first, you get a seat into the WPT Invitational, which is worth $25,000. So that, you know, that's a pretty big deal because people really want to get into that event. Just a whole bunch of cool stuff you can win, like watches, and you can win WSOP Academy, Private Lesson with Me. Like, there's just a whole bunch of cool prizes that you can win. And the best poker players in the world are going to be there. So we've got Howard Lederer coming, Andy Block, Joe Sebok, Ali Najad, Greg Mueller's coming, like, oh, my God, like, everybody. It would be impossible for me to list them all. We also have some really cool celebrities coming. Like, for example, Kathy Najimy is coming, who actually was just doing a turn on Desperate Housewives last night. And it's just, like, it's a lot of people. People can find out about it by going to decisioneducation.org. There's a link there. Or they can go to greasywheels.com, and they can find out about it there. I've been tweeting it a lot. I've been tweeting links to it. And hopefully we're just going to be able to raise a bunch of money to teach our kids to actually think well, as opposed to be able to pass one of these no kid left behind tests, which have really destroyed sort of the education system, particularly the public education system in this country. So let's, you know, all pitch in and try to improve that.
Very well said. Good luck with the event. We really appreciate you coming on here. I love your tweets. By the way, Annie is on Twitter as Real Annie Duke, if you want to follow her there. And go ahead.
Before I go, I just want to get Dennis Phillips' opinion on something, because I have a very strong opinion on this. Dennis, I want to know who you thought, you know, one or two people, who you thought were really playing the best at that table, like just really playing above the rim and playing really well at that final table.
Well, the gentleman from France, I thought, played a very, very solid and well game. Phil obviously played a good game. He just was card dead on it and everything like that. I thought Kevin Schaffel played very, very solid. And if I had to pick another one out of it, Eric Buchman probably played a good, solid game, although he had a couple of questionable ones on there. But, I mean, he laid down kings pre-flop one time because he had such a good read on the guy.
I have to say, like, I got to go with, you know, I think that this is where you can really see that poker really is a game of skill. Because, and in talking to my peers, I haven't heard any differing opinions. So, you know, my feeling is Schaffel wasn't there long enough, but it looked like he was playing really well and obviously got disastrously unlucky. You know, yep. Ivy was a non-factor because of his cards. So if you kind of factor those two people out, I felt like Sout and Buchman were by far, like, it was like them and then kind of the rest of the table in terms of the quality of play. The other thing I thought was really interesting, which I just want to say on the way out, is that the play changed drastically from when Ivy was in to when Ivy went out. It was like when Ivy went out, everybody was like, oh, phew, we can play poker now. Because I think everybody was so terrified of doubling Ivy up that it really made the play really strange. It was like nobody was willing to play any poker, really, I think, except for Buckman. Nobody was willing to play much poker. When Ivy went out, the whole game completely changed. Like, everybody was like, oh, thank God. Like, now I'm the best player in the game. We can play poker now. It was very interesting to watch.
Well, I want to say one other thing, too, before you get out of here. I know you played that thing at the beginning with Joan Rivers. If you want to see a class act, guys, I've been privileged enough to know Annie a little bit here and her brother Howard. That is a class act, guys. They raise millions and millions of dollars, not tens of thousands, millions of dollars for charities. They do it on their own time, and they're just a class act. So I'm proud that when I come up, Annie will sit there and talk, and we can talk about poker. But those are two great people.
Oh, Dennis, don't sell yourself short either, but thank you.
Annie, we really appreciate your time today. We got to run. Annie Duke, a pleasure having you on the show. We look forward to talking to you again soon. Good luck with the event next week. This is the Lumiere Plays Final Table on 590 of the Fan KFNS and downloads on the podcast on thechipleader.com.
Hi, Bob Eubanks here. I can't wait to come to town with my $250,000 game show spectacular.
This November, the game shows you once loved are your chance to win big cash. At Lumiere Place Casino and Hotels, play through November to win a seat in the game show audience November 28th. And if Bob Eubanks calls your name, you could be one of 50 to take home cash and prizes. And six lucky contestants will play for their chance at $250,000. Get to Lumiere Place and earn your spot in the audience today. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
It's time to make the switch. Brought to you by Verizon Wireless, who are excited to introduce friends and family. Unlimited calling to the numbers you call most. Choose any numbers on any network, even landlines, anytime. Plus, get unlimited calling to America's largest mobile-to-mobile calling family, over 80 million strong. Visit any Verizon Wireless communication store, verizonwireless.com, or call 1-800-2-JOIN-IN. Now, let's find out what's coming up next on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Well, that'll be Jay and Bob coming up next with the Afternoon Saloon. I'm Paul Harris in St. Louis at the Lumiere Place Casino Hotel Poker Room. Dennis Phillips is in Las Vegas. And, we talked so much here about the World Series of Poker. Next week, we'll have to devote a lot of time to high-stakes poker because you're playing there Thursday, right, Dennis?
Absolutely am. I got to play the Poker After Dark real quick, and now I'm going to play high-stakes poker.
We will have stories about all of that on next week's show. Remember, the podcasts are on thechipleader.com. Send your emails to dennisphillipspoker@gmail.com. This is 590 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.